What we're going to take a look at today in a special shiur devoted to Chag HaShavuot is how Shavuot became Shavuot. If you ask the average person on the street what Shavuot is, it depends, of course, what street you're on, but let's say Pico, they'll tell you Zman Matan Torateinu, and indeed, source one supports that, and source one is just the earliest source that we have that says this explicitly, but we will see earlier sources that certainly do go in this direction. Source one is the earliest Siddur that we have. Just for fun, I put it up there. It is Seder of Amram Gaon. Rav Amram Gaon was one of the heads of the yeshivot in Bavel, hence the title Gaon, in the 9th century. And he wrote the first, that, as far as we know of it, the first actual Siddur. It's interesting, just as a side note, what a Siddur is. We think of Siddur as a repository of prayers. But a Siddur, actually, what does the word mean, Siddur? It means arrangement.
Order, yeah.
Right, and the real purpose of a siddur was not to present the text of the prayers, but rather the order in which they're said and any special prayers that are said at certain times. So it was more of a halachic guide. And if you look into these siddurim from, let's say, the 9th, 10th century, they're much more a seder than a prayer book, if you will. And you see here, and I mean, by the way, same thing in the 13th century. Take a look at the Machzor Vitri from the school of Rashi. But here, Ma'ariv l'chag HaShavuot, here's what you do on Shavuot. V'omdim b'tfilah, you stand up and say tfilah, mitpavlin avot u'gvurot k'dushat Hashem, right? The first three brachot that we have in every shmo, in every tfilah. Ve'atah b'chartanu, k'mo b'pesach. Now, in Pesach, he listed the wording. So we already have the wording there. You can check there. Ela she'omer et yom chag HaShavuot hazeh zman matan Torateinu. As opposed to at Yom Chag HaMatzot HaZeh Zman Chirutenu. Right, so the name of the holiday is different. We knew that, and the celebration, I'm sorry, the celebration or the focal point of the celebration is Zman Matan Torateinu. Well, the Zechut Siyam Mitzrayim, Yalav Yevo, etc. Right. So again, it's the directions. This is the earliest place that I could find where that wording was there. But the notion that Chag HaShavuot celebrates Zman Matan Torah is much older than that. So let's see where that comes from. We're going to come back to source two in a minute, but I want to go first to source four, and not for any reason of trying to be confusing, but source four will actually kind of leapfrog us and then get us to source two and three. The Gemara in Psachim, it's a well-known discussion. It discusses the way that a person should celebrate a Yom Tov. Tanya, Reb Eliezer Omer, Ein lo la'adam b'yom tov, ela o ochel v'shoteh, o yoshev v'shoneh. Reb Eliezer says, and there's several ways to read this. Let's read it the literal translation, then we'll discuss it. It says, on Yom Tov, you either have a choice of sitting and eating or sitting and learning. Which sounds like, in the extreme, that you, and if you took option number one, you would never daven, you would never learn, you would just sit and eat for 24 straight hours. And the other one, you would fast. He doesn't mean that. I don't think so. But in other words, the emphasis on the holiday should either be a gastronomic fest or a learning more, we call it intellectual, spiritual experience. Rav Yehoshua Omer Chalkehu. Rav Yehoshua says, no, you got to divide the day up. Half of it should be devoted to eating and drinking. Half of it in the Beit Midrash. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan analyzing this 200 years later says, Ushnehem mikra achad darshu. Just parenthetically, this is something that Rabbi Yochanan frequently says when analyzing a machloket. Because you might think that when there's a machloket about practice, it's because each one has picked a particular pasuk that they see as the guiding pasuk for that halacha. And that pasuk indicates one thing, that pasuk indicates another thing. And Rabbi Yochanan comes to tell you, no, you can disabuse yourself of that notion. They are both looking at the same pasuk, and they're interpreting it differently, which is not really one pasuk, but two. Ketuv echad omer, atzeret la'Adonai Elohecha. That is in Emor, or sorry, in Pinchas, when it talks about Chag HaMatzot. It says, you know, Ka'ela, da 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 da. And then on the 7th day is Atzeret Lashem. Atzeret means some sort of a gathering, Lashem. V'chatuv achad omer, Atzeret tiyeh lachem. In Parshat Emor, when it talks about Shmini Atzeret, it says Atzeret tiyeh lachem. So now, one of these holidays, Shvi Shel Pesach, is called Atzeret to Hashem. And Shmini Atzeret is called Atzeret Tialachem. And nobody seems to take the obvious route of interpretation, which is to say that the seventh day of Pesach should be a spiritual holiday and the eighth day of Sukkot should be a gastronomic holiday. In other words, each pasuk is talking about a different day, but rather they're understanding it as being a defining feature of all Chagim. So Rabbi Elazar savar, O kula l'Hashem, O kula l'Chem. Rabbi Elazar says that the Torah is basically giving you two different ways to celebrate a Chag, l'Hashem or l'Chem, and take your choice, either one's legit. Rabbi Yeshua savar chalkeu. He says, no, the psukim are not coming to give you two options. The psukim are coming to give you the tension of the two directions the day must have, and therefore you have to divide it, l'Hashem and l'Chem. And we're understanding l'Chem, sorry. We're understanding l'Chem as being eating and drinking, and Lashem is being studying. And now, that's the machloket. The psak, as you may well know, is like Rabbi Yeshua, and the Rambam says it explicitly, Chatzil Hashem, Chatzil Hashem. And the Rambam has for Shabbat and for Yom Tov a schedule that he presents in the Mishnah Torah. You get up in the morning, you go to davening, and then you come home, and then you have kiddush, and you have a meal, and you have wine, and then you go to mincha, and you learn for a while, and then et cetera, all laid out. Now, Amar Rabbi Elazar, there are three pickups from this machloket. As you can see, the siman, ayin bet mem. The ayin stands for atzeret. And the funny thing about it is that the seventh day of Pesach is called atzeret by the Torah. Shmini atzeret is called atzeret by its name. And the one day that the Chachamim called atzeret is the one that's not that, which is Shavuot. Go figure that one out. Amar Rabbi Elazar, kol modim ba'atzeret deba'inan nami lachem. So there's something funny about the way Rabbi Elazar says it. This is not Rabbi Eliezer. This is Rabbi Elazar, the Chacham in Tveria 200 years later. Everybody agrees that on atzeret, you need lachem. Which means, who's he commenting on? He's commenting on Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, who said you have a choice on each chag to make it fully celebratory with food and drink, or fully spiritual and intellectual. But he said, Rabbi Eliezer will agree that on Shavuot you must have a lachem component, you must have a festive meal. Mai tama, yom shenitna bo Torah. And there's two things about this statement which I think are a little curious, besides the obvious one, which was the whole focus of the shiur. One is you would think that if it's the day that we're celebrating Matan Torah, the consensus would have been you need lachem. You need it to be a day of study and spiritual endeavors. And okay, you can have lachem also. And the second thing is, what is the most common feature of Pesach? Ask anybody what Pesach is, they'll tell you the Seder. The Seder is a meal. What will people tell you is the most common feature of Sukkot is the meals in the Sukkah. You think about it. When you talk about Sukkot, right? But people ask you, what are you doing for Pesach? What do they really mean? Where are you going to be for Seder? Right? And if they say, where are you going for Sukkot? Where are you going for the meals of Sukkot? When somebody asks you, what are you going to be for Shavuot? What are they really asking you? Are you staying up all night? And whose shiur are you going to? Or are you teaching somewhere? But it's funny that Shavuot is dafka, the one that's most Lashem. And here he says, everybody agrees here you need Lachem. Why? Because Yom Shenitna Bo Torah. Right? And the big question underneath that is, who says it's Yom Shenitna Bo Torah? That's what we got to get to. Amar Rabbah, kol modim is Shabbat benyanam lachem. So Rabbah says Shabbat, which is not really under discussion here, but as long as it's a special day, we'll mention also that certainly needs lachem. Mai tama v'karata l'Shabbat oneg, the famous pasuk in Yeshayahu Nun Chet. You have to declare Shabbat a day of oneg, right? Oneg means pleasure, physical pleasures. Yosef, a kol modim bePurim d'benyanam lachem. Now notice Purim and Shabbat are not part of the discussion, because the discussion is about Yamim Tovim. But you know, we're talking about it. So Rav Yosef says everybody agrees on Purim, you need Lachem, because after all, it's Yimei Mishteves Simcha. Okay. Marbre Dravina Koleshata Vyati Vitanita. He would be willing to fast any time of the year. Levar Me'atzarta, except for Shavuot, Upuria, and Purim, Umala Yom Adichipuri, and Erev Yom Kippur. And what was his reasons? We won't go into the other ones, but Atzeret is Yom Shenitna Bo Torah, which means that at least in Babel, by the 4th century, this notion that Shavuot is without question Yom Shenitna Bo Torah, and that's what we're celebrating, And as a result, we're not allowed to fast, and we must be very festive, was already a popular expression. And now, if you take a look at the bottom two lines, I don't want to cut the sugya up, but the rest about Erev Yom Kippur, but bottom two lines is a story about Rav Yosef. Right? Rav Yosef was the one who says, we certainly all agree that on Purim you need lachem. Rav Yosef biyoma da'atzarta amar avdili egla tilta. Rav Yosef, who was both somewhat wealthy, but more critically was blind, and so he couldn't do these things himself, on Shavuot would tell his servants to prepare a really fatted calf, like a gezunta meal. Amar, and what was his argument? Ilo hayoma, if it were not for today, meaning for the thing we're celebrating today, to Gagarim, kama Yosef ikashuka. Basically, there, but for the grace of God, go I. In other words, if it weren't for what makes today special, there's a lot of Yosefs in the shuk. What makes me Rav Yosef and special is Torah. And that's what we're celebrating today. So today's a big feast day. All right. So that's kind of the background. And now here's the other piece of the background. The Gemara in Shabbat, this is a well-known, relatively long passage, and it's the most intense collection of agadot about Matan Torah that we have anywhere in the Bavli. There are a lot of people who will study this section in the middle of the night as part of their Shavuot exercises. And it is in the ninth parak of Masechet Shabbat. And in the middle of that discussion, we have the following. Tanu Rabbanan, B'shishi b'chodesh nitnu aserata dibrot li'Yisrael. Now, before mentioning this, we have to clarify something. You have been saying, and I have been saying collectively, the group around here, for several hundred years, we have, if we add them all up together, we have been saying the words Zman Matan Toratenu, correct? Right? We've been saying it for 50, 60 years, times however many we are here. What does that mean? What was given on Shavuot? When you say Zman Matan Toratenu?
And given, not received,
Well,
necessarily.
okay, but what was given? What was it that was given, whether received or not? What was it was given? Because how long did it take for the Torah to be given? The answer is right there in the Torah. It took about 39 years, right? It was given Har Sinai, and it was given in the Mishkan, and then it was given on the road in the Mishkan, and it was given on Avot Moav, and it was given all the way up until Moshe Rabbeinu finally wrote a Sefer Torah before he died. So what does it mean? So here the sugya crystallizes a little bit. Is B'shishi b'chodesh, meaning the sixth day of Sivan, which is Shavuot, nitnu aserata dibrot liYisrael. The aserata dibrot were given. Now, what does that mean? So we'll discover pretty soon that it doesn't mean given in written form. It means we heard it. We heard the aserata dibrot on the sixth day of Sivan. That's the day that God's glory came down on the mountain, and that's the day that we all heard God's voice saying, Anochi, etc. And that event took place on the sixth day of Sivan, and that's what is we're commemorating on the day, perhaps. But that was given then, right? And Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Shivabo, Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says it was the seventh of Sivan. Now, lest you want to go in this direction, and say, well, Rabbi Yossi lived in Chutz Lartz, and they had 2 days Yontif, and he wanted. Okay, it's not that Rabbi Yossi, first of all, didn't live in Chutz Lartz, and we're not going to get silly like that. But Rabbi Yossi says that the event happened on the seventh. Now, interesting, Rabbi Yossi doesn't lobby anywhere that Shavuot should be on a different day. So he's saying, just as a historic event, it happened on the seventh. We celebrated on the sixth, separate thing. Now, Amar Rava, here we go. The Chulei Alma, now this is Rava's take on the Machloket. Everybody agrees, which means Rabbi Yossi and Chachamim agree. Barosh Chodesh Atu Lemidbar Sinai. Everybody agrees that the nation arrived in Har Sinai on Rosh Chodesh Sivan. That was yesterday. How do we know that? Because Ktiv hacha b'yom hazeh b'Omidbar Sinai. Because here, if you take a look in the beginning of chapter 19, which is the story of Matan Torah, b'Chodesh Hashlishi, source 11, it says b'nei Yisrael b'Eretz Yisrael in the third month, b'yom hazeh b'Omidbar Sinai. Oh, b'yom hazeh. Okay, what does that do for me? And you know that line from the beginning of the first mitzvah that we got, which is Kiddush Chodesh. in Mitzrayim, and Hashem says to Moshe, "Achodesh hazeh lachem." So he's saying hazeh means it's on that day. And it's the understanding is that Hashem told Moshe the parsha of Rosh Chodesh on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And so hazeh, okay, so they arrive, but Chodesh HaShlishi means not just in the third month, but the first day of the third month. You can challenge that inference, but Rav is saying that everybody's on board that they arrived on Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Mala on Rosh Chodesh, on Rosh Chodesh. Second, Ulechule Alma, and this is the one that's really strange. B'Shabbat Ninat Torah Yisrael, meaning the revelation with the 10 utterances, Anochi, etc., was on Shabbat. How do I know that? So this is strange. Zachort It says in Aseret HaDibrot, Zachort Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho. Uktiv Hatam VaYom HaShalom Yom HaZeh. When Bnei Israel leave Mitzrayim, Moshe tells them, Zachort HaYom HaZeh Shetzatem Mitzrayim. Remember this day that you left Mitzrayim. And so the notion is, Malan Mitzvot Moshel Yom. In other words, we remember Yetziat Mitzrayim on the day we left. And therefore, you would say, well, we remember Shabbat on the day of Shabbat. That's what works. After all, what's the mitzvah of Zachor Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho? We understand halachically to be primarily Kiddush and maybe Havdalah on the day of Shabbat. But what Rav is saying is more than that, is that therefore, when it says in the Aseret HaDibrot, Zachor Yom HaShabbat, that means it was said on Shabbat because Zachor is on the same day it happened. It's stretchy, and I think there's something more there. So therefore, if we all agree that they arrived in the Midbar on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and we all agree that they got the Torah on Shabbat, and then when you go through the Psukim, you may make the argument that it was the first Shabbat they were there, that there were no more than 7 days between arrival and revelation, maybe. So ki pligya b'kviya d'archa, the disagreement is simply what the Rosh Chodesh was. Yosef ha-b'chad b'shabayik b'ayarcha v'chad b'shabay lo amar lehu. That Rabbi Yossi says they arrived on Rosh Chodesh was Sunday. On Sunday, there were no communication between Hashem and Moshe about separating and preparing. Right? Mishum chulshed orcha, because they were tied from the root. Betrei b'shba Monday. Sorry, on Monday, Amar lehu v'atem tiyulim malachet kohanim, the beginning of the dialogue between Hashem and Moshe. And then on the third, on Tuesday, Hashem told Moshe the mitzvah of separating from the mountain. On the fourth of the month, they separated for 3 days, and therefore fourth, fifth, sixth, and Hashem came down on the seventh of Sivan, which means they arrived Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is nothing. Monday, they're given the offer of the Brit. Tuesday, given the mitzvah of Hagbalah. Wednesday, Moshe enforced the separation between the men and the women. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbat, Matan Torah. Rabbanan Sari betray Bishvaik v'Yarcha, and the Rabbanan say Rosh Chodesh was on Monday. Betray Bishvah lo amar v'lo midi. Again, nothing was said on the next day, which now is Tuesday. Shulchan Shidorcha, because they just arrived. Bitzlatam lehu to Yuli, and on the third day, which is now on Wednesday, Hashem told them, "You want the deal?" Mitzvah Hagbalah Avud Prisha. And the difference is whether or not the 3 days of separation culminate in Matan Torah or they're after that. Okay, somewhat minute details, but the machloket here, according to the way Rava frames it, is when was Rosh Chodesh? And as a result of that, since they got the Torah on Shabbat, what day of the month was it? Sixth or seventh? And again, nobody's recommending that we celebrate Shavuot on any other day as a result of this. So it seems to be detached from the issue of whether Shavuot Zman Matan Torah. All right. So just a curiosity about the calendar. And we're going to get into the Psukim because it all starts there. This is just the foreshpice. Is what date is Shavuot? Just stop. Forget about what Shavuot's celebrating. What date is Shavuot?
50th day after the
That's not a date. That's a relative.
there is no date, is there? There's no
Sure,
date.
the sixth of Sivan. I promise you.
Here.
The sixth of Sivan. Look on your calendar every year, sixth of Sivan. However, the Tosefta here in Arachin makes the following comment. Atzeret, Shavuot, pa'amim shechal yod b'chamisha, u'vishisha, u'vishiva. Atzeret could be on the fifth of Sivan, could be on the sixth of Sivan, could be on the seventh of Sivan. Because as David pointed out, the only date given for Shavuot, and even that's a little difficult to get, is not a date, but a relative day, day 50 from when he brought the Omer. Problem, of course, is, as we spoke about a few dives ago, what day was the Omer brought? That's a different problem. And so as a result of that, Shavuot could be fifth, sixth, or seventh as a result of the following. Let's say that Nisan is, as it is in our practice, a full month. So Rosh Chodesh is 2 days. Let's say that Iyar were a full month, not like our practice, and it was also 2 full days. Shavuot would end up on the fifth of Sivan. Let's say that Nisan and Iyar were both deficient months of 29 days. Shavuot would be on the seventh of Sivan. As it is, since in our fixed calendar, Nisan is always 30 and Iyar is always 29, Shavuot's always on the sixth. But really, it's a floating day, which highlights part of the problem of Shavuot, which now is several things. Shavuot doesn't have a date, and Shavuot also doesn't seem to connect to Matan Torah, as we will see in the Torah, and where did this all come from? And that's the focus this year. Where did this all come from? So let's see. We're going to go through a history of Shavuot. It starts in Parshat Mishpatim, which we're going to circle back to at the end of this year. In Parshat Mishpatim, when Moshe is in the cloud at the foot of the mountain, getting the rest of the law code, or the first part of the law code, as part of that, Hashem says towards the end of the law code, he says, Shalosh regalim tachogli b'shana, I have three pilgrimage festivals, Chag HaMatzot, which is because he left Mitzrayim, it's explicitly because he left Mitzrayim. And what's the next holiday given? So the next two, the other two of the three, are in one pasuk. The Chag HaKatzir, and you notice I highlighted the phrase with red, because that's the name of the holiday. The first name we're given to this holiday is Chag HaKatzir, which means the festival of harvest,
First
harvest
coming.
festival. Bikurei Maasecha. Bikurei Maasecha means the very first fruit of what you have done. Asher tizra basadeh, that you plant in your field. There's a holiday called Chag HaKatzir. And there's another holiday called Chag HaAsif, B'Tzeit HaShana, the festival of gathering at the end of the year, Bo'os Pachat Maasecha V'Nasadeh, when you gather everything in from the field. So the way it's presented here is the harvest season has bookended holidays, one at the beginning, at Bikurim, and one at the end, Chag HaAsif. And that's the name of the holiday, Chag HaKatzir, Chag HaAsif. Okay, this is all at the foot of our Sinai covenant code. Beautiful. If you recall, if you have that good of a memory, then, because it's a few thousand years ago, is after we got this code, we messed up. And we were almost obliterated and annihilated by Hashem, and Moshe saved the day. And as a result of that, there was a re-covenanting that went on. And if you recall the phrase, etc., but immediately after that is, Hinei anochi koreit brit. I'm making another brit. And mu much of the components of the brit in the first law code are repeated. So in Perek Lamed Daled, you have Chag HaMatzot, you left Mitzrayim, and then we have a holiday called Chag Shavuot. What the heck is that? Chag Shavuot. We have no idea what that means. Ta'aselecha bikurei ksir chitim. Well, we're told what it's celebrating. It's the first of the harvest, and now we're told harvest of wheat, which also tells us about when it is. It's around middle of May to the beginning of June when wheat is harvested, the beginning of the wheat harvest. V'chag ha'asif tkufat ha'shana. Chag ha'asif again, the ingathering festival at the end of the year, time the year turns, which is at the end of the harvest season. So that's what Shavuot is. And we know it's called Shavuot. We got no idea why yet. It's a weird name for a holiday. And we know that it's when you're celebrating the harvest, the beginning of the harvesting of wheat, which is far more significant than barley, which we celebrated on Pesach, because wheat is everything, and barley is animal food and cholent, right? But then we get to the calendar in Vayikra, and I'm not skipping any mentions of the Chag. In Vayikra, you have the fullest treatment of the calendar. You have Shabbat, Pesach, Matzot, not the same holiday, then you have this. And after this, you have Yom Teruah and Yom Kippurim and Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret and Kiddush. Right? Here we go. Vayidbar Source 7. Ki tavo el haaretz asher ani noten lachem, and you come to the land, uktzartem et ktzira, and you harvest its harvest. What's that? Ve'avitem et re'omer v'shik tzarchem la kohen. You're going to take an omer of the very first thing you harvest to the kohen. So now we already know that this is barley only because we know the harvest cycle in Eretz Yisrael. And we actually know it from parts from Sefer Shemot. I'll go to you in a second. So we know that the very first thing of harvest in the agricultural season in Eretz Yisrael is barley. I know that from Makat Barad. If I go back to the story of the Makot Mitzrayim and I go to the Makat of Hail at the very end of Parshat Vayera, if you recall at the very end of that Parsha, Alan, you may remember the story about the boy on the bus. The end of the Parsha, there's an agricultural report that says that the barley was nailed because it was already in the stalks, and the wheat was saved because it was later growing. So this barley is prepared, is ripened before wheat. All right, so we got that. So what's going to be the first thing that you harvest? We barley. It's around Pesach time. Okay. Now, ve'nifata, by the way, at no point does it say barley in this parsha, but we'll figure that out. And we did on a different dive. He lifts up the Omer. And then you do a Korban on that day. We learned that in Menachot. We dealt with that in detail. And then the Isur of Chadash. Now, next paragraph. You should count from this Machorat HaShabbat that we defined earlier. From the day you bring this Omer, count 7 full weeks. What does 7 full weeks mean? 7 perfect weeks. What's Machorat HaShabbat? Different year. Ad Machorat HaShabbat HaShvit, until the day after the Shabbat HaShvit. So if you count 7 weeks, what's the next day going to be? It's going to be day 50. Seven times seven, the next day is day 50. Tisburu Chamishim Yom. So you count 50 days. Soloveitchik has an interesting observation. He says, we don't actually count 50 days, do we? We count 49. But he says that Kiddush on the first night of Shavuot is the counting of the 50th day, which may be the reason that we wait till late to daven and make Kiddush. Right, maybe. So now notice there is no mention of a chag at all. You count 49 days, and on day 50, you bring a new offering to Hashem. I found out two things about this. A, it's wheat, solet. And second of all, it's chametz. And remember, we studied this in Menachot in detail. This is the one public korban that's chametz. Can't go on the mizbeach, etc. Right? Now, along with it, you bring the shiva kvasim, and then you bring the two kvasim that he lifts up with them, etc. And now, only at the end of this parsha does it say what we're trying to get to, which is ukratem be'etzem hayom hazeh mikra kodesh elachem. On this very day, you declare a holiday. No malacha. Now, this is weird. It's weird in the following way. When you think about the relationship between a chag and the mitzvah that is associated with it, which generates which? The answer is pretty simple. The chag generates the mitzvah. Rosh Hashanah is coming. Atabol shofar. Sukkot, Seir, take arba minim. This seems to be the opposite. The Torah says on day 50, bring a korban. And when you bring the korban, declare it to be a yom tov. There's even reason to argue that the night of Shavuot's not a chag. I'm not saying anything practical, of course, but because the chag is generated by the korban's only during the day. And then when you bring the korban, declare it to be a holiday. So here you have the opposite kind of thing where you bring a korban, and the korban creates a chag, not the chag creates a korban. Okay. Now, by the way, this chag has no name. You notice there's no name here. Nothing's marked in red. No name. But I now suddenly understand why over here in source 6, the Torah called it Chag Shavuot. Because how did I get to this holiday? I had to count weeks. So I have to count 7 weeks. And the next day is a holiday, which is generated by the fact I bring the first wheat offering of the season, of the year, and therefore it's generated. So Chag Shavuot. Okay, I get it. I move ahead to Bamidbar, and the holiday is mentioned again in the second full presentation, not as detailed, but the second full presentation of the calendar, which is in Pinchas. We all know Pinchas. We read from it yesterday. Tzav b'nei Yisrael, Martam, and Korban Yilach b'nei Yishai, which is followed by Uviyom HaShabbat, which is followed by Uvrashei Chod Sheichem. We read all that yesterday. And then Uvachodesh HaRishon, Pesach, and Matzot. And then here, Uviyom HaBikurim. Suddenly, this holiday's got yet a fourth name. Well, third name. Chag HaKatzir, Chag HaShavuot, Yom HaBikurim. Why is it called Yom HaBikurim?
Yes,
Well, the answer is right there in the
the
pasuk. When you bring your new offering, it's called Bikurim because you're bringing the first wheat offering of the season, meaning the new wheat of the season is first brought on Shavuot. There we go. Separately, the mitzvah of Bikurim, which is brought not as a public korban, but as a private korban by farmers, starts now, meaning after Shavuot, you can bring Bikurim all summer. But it's called Yom HaBikurim because of the korban. So it says right there is the new offering of the wheat. And then Shavuot shows up one last time. By the way, it does not show up anywhere in Nach. Pesach shows up in Nach a lot. It's in Yehoshua. It's in Malachim. It's in Divrei Hayamim in several places. Right? Pesach is in a few places in Nach. Right? It's in Ezra. Sukkot, famous passage in Nehemiah about Sukkot. Besides the Nevuot about Sukkot and Zechariah, Shavuot, Nath does not show up anywhere in Nach.
They love it in the New Testament.
This is it. No, that's fine. It Pentecost them a lot. Now, Shiva Shavuot Tisporlach, here's the last mention, in Sefer Dvarim. And this is in the short presentation, which is the Shalosh Regalim. By the way, this is a reading that everybody in Chutz La'aretz knows well, and people in Eretz Yisrael don't know. It's a reading that happens four times a year in Chutz La'aretz and once a year in Eretz Yisrael. Why? It's a good trivia question. Is because this is the reading for the last day of Yom Tov. So we read it on Achron Shel Pesach. Eretz Yisrael, people are already having pita. We read it on Shavuot. Eretz Yisrael, they'll be reading Parshat Naso already. And we read it on Shmini Atzeret. We're in Israel reading Zot HaBracha. And we read it in Parshat Re'eh, where it belongs. In Israel, they read it on Parshat Re'eh. Right? It's a funny thing. You get together sometimes with friends who are Baalei Kriya, and you bat around psukim that everybody knows, and people bat around psukim from this passage. Everybody knows them, and then some guy from Israel doesn't have the same fluency because it's read once a year in a Re'eh. Anyhow, Shiva Shavuot Tisporlach. This is how the parsha starts. Count 7 weeks. Me'achel chemesh ba'kamaf. When you pick up the scythe over the stalk, tachel lispor shiva shavuot. Start counting shiva shavuot. V'asita chag shavuot Adonai Elohecha. Now this references us back to source six, chag shavuot. All right, so it's a chag shavuot. And misat nidvay d'chashitein. Nothing here is mentioned about a special offering, but that's not what this parsha is about. Nothing's mentioned here about the Isur Malacha, but that's not part of what this parsha is about. And you bring a Chag Shavuot. What do you notice? There's a deafening silence about what in all of these passages, which is six passages, one, two, three, four, five passages. What deafening silence have you encountered?
Kabbalat HaTorah.
Nothing to do with Matan Torah. No connection whatsoever. Okay. So I'd like to make the following proposal, that Matan Torah, actually, if you look carefully, may already be in the Psukim, not in those parshiot, but in another parsha, which you're going to look at, and will also help us understand the Rava's contention that everybody's on board that the Torah is given on Shabbat. So let's go to source 10. Source 10 would seem to have nothing to do with anything. It's the story of the man. The man. You could say it has to do with because it's a new wheat offering. I don't know if it was wheat, coriander, ich weiß nicht. My kids once asked me, what bracha do you make on the man? So what would you have answered them?
Shekhol
No, probably Hamorid Lechem Min HaShamayim. Okay. Because it is called lechem in the parsha. Lechem, it doesn't mean bread. Remember that. Vayisum me'elim. Vayavo ko'ed Yisrael in Bar Sinai. Asher b'nei in Sinai. So b'nei Yisrael now travel. And they come to, they're on the way to Rephidim. This is before the battle with Amalek. This is after they've left Marah, where they had the bitter waters, right after Kriyat Yamsuf. And they get to Midbar Sin. B'chamishas yom l'chodesh hasheni. It's the 15th day of the second month. Dahainu, exactly a month after they left Egypt. Now, this is one of the few places in Chumash, where I'm given the date of an event. Right? I have a couple dates in the story of the flood, but it's a little unclear what Bachodesh Hasheni and Chodesh Hashvi is. there, and it's Machloket Tanaim. Remember, if it's Iyar or Macheshvan, where they're counting from. But starting from the patriarchal narratives, there are zero dates. In Bereshit, after we meet Avram, there are zero dates for anything. In Shmot, there are zero dates for anything except when Hashem commands Moshe to erect the Mishkan. Now, we have a good reason to think that the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh is on the first, because we said, by Rosh Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, and Hashem commands them to take in the lamb on the 10th. So we assume they did that, but we don't hear that they did. I'm talking about a date that records an event, not a date where they're commanded to do something. And we are told that on that very night, Makat Bechorot happened, and we figure out that's the night of the 15th, but it doesn't say it with a date. What dates do we have in Chumash Bechlal? So we have this one. We don't have any in Vayikra. In Bamidbar, we have the date of the census that we heard this past week, right? And then we have the inauguration of the Mishkan, which seems to be each day is the day, that date in Nisan, but not it's not explicit. And then people come to Moshe by Yom Ahu saying we're tameh, we can't do the Pesach, but what's by Yom Ahu? Again, it's a little unclear. We do have one date in Bamidbar, which is a yahrzeit. Who's the only yahrzeit we know in the Torah?
Aaron?
Aaron, exactly. Right? The first day of Av, very good. So again, I'm just trying to point out this is unusual because we don't generally get dates, and the Torah is not a chronography. So I can give us dates when things happen. But here we're told they arrive on the 15th day of Iyar, what we're calling Iyar, and in the desert. All right, good. So keep that in mind. What day of the week is it? Ich Vesnish. There's no mention here what day of the week it is. We're going to figure it out. Vayilonu kol adat b'nei Yisrael Moshe v'Aharon b'Bamidbar. B'nei Yisrael complain. Nothing new. And they complain, which is better we should have died of on the flesh pots of Egypt than to die of starvation here. Basically, we're hungry. I'm undramatizing it. And now, Moshe, I'm on the fourth line. I'm going to make it rain down food from heaven. And I'm going to have everybody go out and collect everything one day at a time, or each thing for its day. And then this line, which is kind of weird, Laman anasenu ha'ilech b'torah lo. I want to test them to see if they're going to follow my Torah. What's the test? Where's the test?
Will they gather the man?
So what kind of test is
Will
that?
they
It's
take
food I'm testing out.
they take more? Will they take
Okay,
more?
so one argument is, and I've made this argument also, that the test is, are they going to curb their appetites enough to make sure that everybody gets and not grab somebody else's portion or try to hoard it, right? Certainly possible. I think that's right, but I think there's two tests here. One is that test about making sure that everybody gets and not taking more than your portion. And then there's this next line, which is kind of strange. V'haya b'yom hashishi. What does that mean, b'yom hashishi? Because now it's a directive. We have to know when to do it. Hashem is telling Moshe, v'haya b'yom hashishi, v'echinu et asher yaviu. Our Mishnah is shel kitu yom. They should pair what they're going to have. There's going to be double. When's Yom HaShishi? Yom HaShishi is only meaningful as a phrase if either I've said, okay, today's the first day that I'm at this new job. Yom HaShishi is the sixth day I'm at the job. Or if I have a preset calendar in which I refer to days by their number as we do, and Yom HaShishi becomes what we call Erev Shabbat. But that doesn't exist yet. So what's Yom HaShishi mean? I think the simplest meaning is by Yom HaShishi of the man falling. In other words, the man's going to fall, and on the sixth day of it falling, there'll be double. Right? Which means what was the first day the man fell?
Sunday, first
Sunday.
Yom Rishon.
Sunday. Now, did the man fall on the day that they arrived in the desert and complained? No. Take a look. Yom HaShoev Aharon El Kobanei Israel. Tonight you're going to know Hashem took us out. Uvoker, in the morning, you'll see God's glory, but you're complaining, right? And now, what does Moshe say? Moshe, God is going to give you meat at night. That's the quail, and bread or food, whatever it is, to sate you in the morning. In other words, when's the man going to fall? in the morning, right? And now, if you move ahead, in the next paragraph, I've heard their complaints. You will eat basar in the late afternoon, evening, and in the morning you'll be sated with lechem, and you'll know that I'm Hashem. And now, what happens? So, at night, the quail showed up and covered the camp. In the morning, there was a layer of dew. And then the dew burned off. There was this thin material on the floor of the desert. And Bnei Israel saw it, and they said, "Manhu." And nobody knows what the word "man" means. Is it Egyptian? Is it Aramaic? Is it Hebrew? Is it just a way of saying "ma"? Go figure, right? But they said "manhu" because they didn't know "mahu," which is argues that "man" is just the form of "ma" with a consonant at the end. Okay, so now, when did the man first fall? In the morning after they complained. Okay, which means now we've got a date. Because they arrived in the desert on the 15th, which we now can figure out was a Shabbat. Correct?
Okay.
With me? Now, they arrived on the 15th, so then the man started falling on the 16th. All right? Good. And then what day did double man fall? And that surprised them because here we go. Vayhi b'yom ha-shishi laktu lechem mishneh. On the sixth day of the man falling, they collected double. What day of the month was that? 21st. 21st. Shemuel, they came to the Nisim, come to Moshe, and they said, "What's going on?" And Moshe said to them, "Who asher diber Adonai?" That's what God said. Shabbaton, Shabbat Kodesh, Adonai Mechar, tomorrow it's a Shabbaton. Prepare everything today, cook everything that you want today, and you can leave it till the morning, and it won't go bad, unlike what happened earlier when somebody kept it over and went bad. And now Moshe says the next blue line, Vayomer Moshe ichluhu hayom. Moshe says, "Eat it today." What day is he? What on what day is he saying this?
Friday
It's on Shabbat.
on Shabbat.
Because he's saying, you better eat it today. Ki Shabbat hayom l'Adonai. Today is Shabbat, a day of Shabbat to Hashem. Hayom lo timsu v'aseh. You won't find it out in the field, which means you can eat it today. It won't have gone bad, but you must eat it today because tomorrow it will have gone bad. What
So we never heard of this thing called Shabbat.
this is where they first heard about it. Two psukim earlier. That's what God said. Shabbaton, Shabbat Kodesh, Adonai Machar. Tomorrow is a Shabbat to Hashem.
What's Shabbat?
What?
What is Shabbat? We don't know anything about that. I don't,
You're
haven't heard
right.
about
This is
this.
when they first heard about it. Correct. I
Okay.
agree. This is when they first heard about it. Yeah, we have the Midrash about the Marah. We don't actually know what they were given at Marah, what details they were given. But here's the first explicit time that Bnei Israel hear about Shabbat. We know about it from Bereishit, but that's not part of their calendar. And Bereishit doesn't give any commands, it just describes it as happening. Here they're told, you know what, because people were, remember, every day that they collected, they got their portion. The first day, some people kept it over and hoarded it, and the next day it went bad. So we've stopped doing that. And so they were all surprised when there was double as much as fell on the fourth, fifth, on the sixth day, as much as it fell every other day. And they were kind of worried. And Moshe said, no, this is right. Hashem said that tomorrow's Shabbat, there won't be any man. And today you take what you have, prepare it, and you can eat it tomorrow. Cook it and prepare it for tomorrow. Bake it, have it for tomorrow, and that's fine. And then on Shabbat, what does Moshe say? Eat it today, because there won't be any out in the field. But he's not just saying you may eat it today, he's also saying you must finish it today. Because afterwards it will go bad, because that'll be hoarding it. Okay, so now, when does Moshe say that? On Shabbat. Shabbat, the date is the 22nd. Are we okay on that? Okay, good. Now, he then says, Shesh Yamim Tukadu, for 6 days you collected, Uvayomashvi Shabbat lo yabot. On the seventh day, there won't be any out there. Vahi bayomashvi yatsuminam lukot. What happened on the seventh day? Some people went out to collect. Right? What day was that? V'lo. What date was that?
The 23rd
No, 23rd
or
was a Sunday.
26th.
The 23rd was a Sunday.
We need a chart.
Okay, good.
22nd.
You might argue it's the 22nd, but I don't think so. Because watch the sequence of what happened. Moshe on the 22nd, meaning the first Shabbat ever in history, ever in history. Moshe comes out and says, Ichlu Hayom, eat it today. Shabbat Hayom Ladonai. Today is the day of Shabbat. Hayom lo timtzu basadeh. You won't find it in the field today. Parenthetically, the famous drasha, Hayom, 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 three, shalosh sudot right there, hinted to. Okay. Shesh jamim tilkadu. For 6 days you'll collect it. V'yom shvi'i Shabbat lo yabo. On 7th day is Shabbat, there won't be any. All right? Now, vayhi bayom hashvi'i, meaning the 7th day from then, meaning the next Shabbat. And you could even sort of justify these people, maybe, by saying, maybe that was a one-time thing. Didn't say anything about every week. Yatzu min ha'am lokot v'lo matzo. Some people went out to collect, they couldn't find it. And now Hashem gets angry and says, how come you're not listening to my mitzvot? Re'u ki Adonai natan lachem ha'shabbat. See, Hashem has given you Shabbat. And by the way, notice, he doesn't get angry and there's no threat of punishment here. So it could be that there's that justification, but now he's clarifying it. Re'u ki Adonai natan lachem ha'shabbat. God has given you Shabbat. Al keinu ten lachem yom ha'shishilach miyamayim. He's giving you, therefore, double portion on Yom HaShishi, and now Yom HaShishi is now Yom HaShishi. It's now a fixed day. Nobody goes out on Yom HaShvi'i, and what happens? Vayishbetu ha'am b'Yom HaShvi'i. They actually all rested on Yom HaShvi'i. What date was that? So, Bill, what's the answer?
It depends.
Right. Think about this. If Shabbat was the 29th, what date was Sunday? Answer, it depends. If they saw the new moon, then Sunday was the first. Right? In which case, what was the first Shabbat that they kept? The 7th of Sivan. If, on the other hand, they didn't see the new moon, then they declared Rosh Chodesh on Monday. And therefore, what was the next Shabbat, the day that they all kept Shabbat? The 6th of Sivan. Now, what did Hashem say at the beginning of this whole episode in red? I'm testing them to see if they're going to follow my Torah. What is the purpose of a test? Should we say, what is the outcome of a test? The outcome of a test is a grade, right? You get the job, you don't get the job. You get the license, you don't get the license, right? You get a test, and there's a result because if there's no outcome that's going to change based on your work on the test, there's no point in the test. So when Hashem says, I'm going to give them the man to test them if they're going to follow my Torah, that means that there's two possible outcomes at least, depending on how well they do on the test. And what are the two possible outcomes seemingly? Do I give them the Torah or not? That's what he said. I want to see if they're going to follow the Torah. So what happens? They pass the first test with flying colors. Nobody takes anybody else's portion. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece that we see in here in the middle. They checked it. Everybody took exactly their portion. Beautiful passing. They passed the first test. What about the second test? So you can argue that they did not pass the second test the first time because on the second Shabbat that they had Man, some people went out to collect. But notice Hashem doesn't get angry. He clarifies that Shabbat is a regular institution now. What happens on the third Shabbat? Nobody goes out and everybody keeps it. I'd like to posit that that's the day they get the Aseret HaDibrot because they passed the test. And therefore, that's how Chazal come up with Vav Sivan or Zayin Sivan, again, the machlok that we had in the Gemara as the day of Matan Torah. Now, another piece to the puzzle here that's going to heighten the connection between the man and Matan Torah. Vayikra'u Beit Yisrael Shmo Man. So Bnei Yisrael now officially called it Man. It's like a coriander seed and it tastes like honey. It's beautiful. Moshe. And then Moshe says, Zeh Adavar Shetziva Adonai. Now Moshe is speaking, as you'll see, to Aaron. Take a vial and put one thing of Omer of the Omer is a measure of the food, as a memorial forever. So people should see the lechem ashar chalti etchem bamidbar that I fed you in the desert. We'll see etchem Mitzrayim. Okay, Vayoma Moshe al Aharon. So who does Moshe speak to? He speaks to Aharon. By the way, you will see some chronological confusion here. We are now before Har Sinai, correct? Matan Torah hasn't happened yet. Vayoma Moshe el Aharon. Take one little vial. V'ten sham lo man. Fill up one omer of man. Place it before Hashem. As a memorial forever. What does that mean? Where's Lifnei Hashem? So we'll find out. Kasher tzivah Adonai Moshe. So just like Hashem commanded Moshe, v'yanicheu Aaron lifnei ha'edut. He puts it in front of the edut. What's the edut? The edut is the Aaron that has what inside of it? The luchot.
Yes.
What luchot?
What Luther?
You see the problem? We're now way ahead. Because this parsha, this at the bottom, was not written now. It was written at the end when Moshe wrote the whole Torah. Then he points and said, by the way, a few months later or a year later, Aaron put some of the man that we're still getting every day, put some of the man in front of the Aaron, as Hashem commanded. How do I know this is written later? Because look at the next pasuk. B'nei Yisrael achlu et haman 40 shana. B'nei Yisrael ate the man for 40 years. Why would Moshe write that before Har Sinai? There
But
was no 40 years.
right.
There was supposed to be a few weeks, and it hadn't happened yet. Bnei Yisrael achlu taman 40 shana ad bo'am el eretz l'shavet. They ate it until they came to the settled land ad bo'am el eretz Canaan, until they came into the edge of Eretz Canaan, which by the way itself is unusual because already in Sefer Yehoshua we hear that they ate the man up until the Pesach. So who wrote this pasuk? Interesting, Ramban in later on in Bamidbar. Fahu. But the point is, notice that the man is supposed to be put in front of the Aseret HaDibrot. Why? Because I believe because the man on two levels was the test that we passed gloriously that got us the Torah. First test, can you curb your appetite enough to make sure that everybody else does without, does, has, and doesn't have to do without, which is the essential kind of premise of Ben Adam L'Chavero. And are you going to keep Shabbat? The essential premise of Ben Adam L'Makom. And the man is like a badge of honor that we pass both tests. And therefore, the Torah was given to us on Yom HaShabbat. So, Zachor Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, imagine happening on that day. Now, one quick thing I want to do. So my argument here is as follows, that Chag HaShavuot was historically not celebrated as Man Matan Torah for a good reason. Matan Torah has no dates in it. Matan Torah itself has no dates in it. And Matan Torah has no dates for, I think, the same reason that we don't know where Har Sinai is. We don't know. We know that it is certainly not where people think it is. It's somewhere else, but we don't know where. Because Matan Torah is supposed to be an event that takes up every one of our days, and it's in every place. And it's relevant everywhere. And therefore, by not isolating it to a particular day or particular time or particular place, it makes it universal. But we do have a different problem, which is what's Pesach like without a Beit HaMikdash? The answer is in Yavne, they figured it out. And we have the Seder. What's Sukkot like without a Beit HaMikdash? Remember, these are basically Mikdash holidays. What's Sukkot like without a Beit HaMikdash? We have Sukkah, we have Arba Minim. All right, good. What's Shavuot like without a Beit HaMikdash? The answer is nothing.
Cheesecake.
Nothing. There's nothing there. There's no mitzvah of Shavuot that applies to anybody except in the Mikdash. It's about a korban. And so you have the two following things in the heels of the korban. You have a chag that really runs the risk of losing a certain amount of relevance because there's nothing you can do without a mikdash as part of that chag. And on the other hand, you have an event which is absolutely momentous, which has no point of celebration. And now we look at the psukim and could say, you know what? These two things seem to have happened at the same time. And as a result of that, Chag HaShavuot becomes Man Matan Torateinu. But we couldn't do it without establishing that that's really the date because we're talking in Tefillah. We can't say it's Man Matan Torateinu. It's more or less a few weeks later. We have to have something nailed down, and I think that's what we got through the psukim. Very quickly, I just want to show you, this is the chronology of Matan Torah. I'm going to do this very quickly as a summary because I want to get to one last thing, believe it or not. This is the beginning of the reading. This is the reading that everybody sleeps through. It's the reading done at, 4 in the morning or 5 and 6 in the morning, whatever. Bachodesh, but it's also in Parshat Yitro. They got there. What happens? Hashem calls Moshe to the mountain. Moshe comes up. Hashem says, ask Bnei Israel if they want the brit. Ask them if they want the brit. Moshe comes down, comes back up, says they want the brit. Says, okay, good. Get them to separate from the mountain, not to touch the mountain. I'm going to come down. Very good. Okay. Then comes down again and it comes up. And Hashem says, tell them to separate the men and the women, right, for a few days. So everybody's tahor, comes down, tells themselves to separate. Very good. And then Hashem speaks to Moshe in the cloud, and he says this thing. It's a really critical line. I'm going to come to you in the thickness of the cloud, so that everybody hears me talking to you. They're going to see you in the cloud, and they're going to hear me talking to you, so that they will also trust you forever. In other words, you think about it. Every time the Moshe comes and says, Hashem said the following thing to me: put fringes on your garment, and build a mishkan, and don't wear Woolsey Lindsey. Well, I don't know that Hashem said that. The answer is this is where it's established. This is where Moshe's credibility and bona fides as the agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is established. They hear him in the cloud. Now, what do they hear him say in the cloud? They hear him say this: go down and tell the people that they should separate from the mountain. And Moshe speaks up. And he says, they already can't come up. You already separated them. And Hashem says, go down anyways and separate them. And everybody's listening to this, which means they know there's a conversation going on between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe, and that's all we need. Moshe comes down to the people, and he says, and then we hear, the Aseret HaDibrot. Where's Moshe? Right out there with the people, at the foot of the mountain, outside the cloud. The cloud covers the mountain, and they're outside. What do the people do in response to the Aseret HaDibrot? They freak out and they say, we don't want to hear this. We're scared. You go get the mitzvot. You come and tell us. And now they can trust him. You go and tell us. We're going to stay from a distance. So Moshe goes into the cloud, not up, into the cloud. And what does Hashem tell him? First of all, don't make golden and silver ornaments to serve with me. Second of all, I make a mizbeach. Here's a mizbeach. Third of all, here's the law code. Ve'ela mishpatim. That vav ve'ela mishpatim continues it. Right? We talked about this on Shabbat. Right? And then all the law code, the criminal code, torts code, bails and usury, everything, all that stuff, all the law code, and then ends with the covenant code, which is the shalosh regalim, etc., and then a bracha. And then at the end of that, what does Hashem say to Moshe? It's really wild. He says, come on up with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, Aaron and the two elder sons, and the 70 elders, and worship from a distance. It means come up to Har Sinai. And Moshe will be the one, the only one to go all the way to the top. What should Moshe do at that point?
You should go down to go
And
get
he's
it.
not down. He is down. What should he
I
do?
thought
He should go out of the.
he heard of the
Look up.
top of
He's
that.
in the cloud at the foot.
Okay, so he's away
He should
from the
go,
people. He's away
but
from
right.
people. They
He's
said,
close to
go
the
away.
mountain, right, in the cloud. He should step out of the cloud and say, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, 70 guys, let's go up to the mountain. He doesn't do that. Moshe comes out, and what does he do? He tells everybody exactly what he was told in the cloud, because what did they ask him to do? You go in and get the mitzvot and tell us. Moshe first does that. And what do they say? Call HaDvarim Asher Dibar Adonai Na'aseh. Everything Hashem said, Na'aseh, we'll do it. Then Moshe writes it down. And then he gets up in the morning the next day and builds a Mizbeach and Matzevot. And then they do Korbanot and he does the Dam and he puts the Dam on the Mizbeach and some of the Dam on the people or on the Matzevot that represent the people because they made a brit with Hashem. He then reads the Sefer HaBrit, the written thing. And what do they say? Take a look at Pasuk Zayin. Call Asher Diber Adonai Na'aseh V'Nishma. Now that they're hearing it from a written text, they say Na'aseh V'Nishma, which means we will do it and we will obey it. Right? It's
Did he
now
ignore
according to.
Hashem? Did he not do what Hashem said to do?
Patience. He's going to get there. Don't worry. It's Moshe Ibn Ne'eman. Right? Then what is Hashem? Hashem then says to Moshe, come on up to the mountain, I'll give you the luchot, etc. And then the cloud now rests on top of the mountain, and it covers the mountain for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he summons Moshe, and Moshe comes in. Just like the Mishkan, where he has to summon Moshe in, Vayikra Moshe, exact same thing. And people are looking at it, and they see a consuming fire on top of the mountain. They watch Moshe go into the fire, and he's there for 40 days and 40 nights. Right? And that, now, what does he get up there? And the answer is right there in the next parsha. He gets all the details of the Mishkan. And the Ramban beautifully says, what is the Mishkan? The Mishkan is simply Har Sinai on wheels. The Mishkan is taking the experience of Har Sinai and making it mobile so that Hashem can continue to give mitzvot. And it's exactly, what's the core point of the Mishkan? It's the Aron, without question. And what's the purpose of the Aron? The Aron is going to have a kaporet and kruvim, and Hashem is going to speak to Moshe from between the kruvim, all the mitzvot. In other words, continuing revelation. That's what the purpose of the Mishkan is. And it's going to be as they move on the way to Eretz Yisrael, otot, immediately getting there, theoretically, right? That's the chronology of it. I want to show you one last thing, even though we're over time. One last thing. In the past, we've talked a little bit about the Apocrypha. One of the apocryphal books that we have, which is, they're all fascinating. It's a sectarian book, but one of the interesting things about it, we're talking about third, second century, some cases first century BCE. I mean, they're all BCE, first century CE a little bit, but we're talking about earlier books, is they reflect Jewish traditions, although they're sectarian Jewish traditions, which means they're traditions that are anchored in the Jewish experience, but the way that they're expressed is sometimes sectarian, Sadducean, or whatever. The Book of Jubilees, which is one of the most wondrous books of the Apocryphal collection, tells the following story about Noah. Remember, Jubilees, if you recall, claims about itself that it was revealed to Moshe on top of Har Sinai as part of Matan Torah. And so there's nothing in Jubilees that goes past Matan Torah. However, I mean, none of this is true that it happened, but however, it is filled with early kind of proto-Midrashim about Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yitzhak Mitzrayim, etc. Really fascinating stuff, including Avram arguing with his father. That's the first place that shows up. It shows up here. And so one of the themes, by the way, Jubilees is exactly what it sounds like, Sefer Yovlim. It's a chronography. It takes all the events and puts them into a time frame. Remember I said at the beginning that we don't have dates for things here. We have dates for everything. When was Avram born? When was Yitzchak born? When did they go down to Mitzrayim? Everything's dates. So on the new moon of the third month, that's Rosh Chodesh Sivan, Noach left the Teva and he built a Mizbeach. And the Mizbeach's in the Torah, right? And describes the whole Korban that he brought. And remember that, and the Brit, much of this is in the Torah, and it's the Midrashic add to it. And now watch what it says. For this reason, it is ordained and written on the heavenly tablets that they should celebrate the Feast of Weeks in this month once a year to renew the covenant every year. Notice, already in the 3rd century BCE or 2nd century BCE, there was a notion that Shavuot is a renewal of the covenant, right? And notice, they said that it was celebrated until the times of Abraham, right? And it was, sorry, it was done away until the times of Noah. Noah then was done away, and then Abraham re-inaugurated it. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all celebrated Shavuot, right? And then they forgot it until they came and celebrated on the mountain, because that's Matan Torah. Look how it all comes around. You read this passage, it's wild. We have to go in a second, right? And notice, for it is the Feast of Weeks and the Feast of First Fruits. This feast is twofold and of a double nature, meaning it's a festival of harvest. It's also a festival of renewing the covenant. Now, I'm not giving any credence to the Book of Jubilees, but historically it means that we now see that as early as the second or third century BCE, there was a belief, at least among a significant part of the Jewish community, that Shavuot was not just a harvest festival, but it was also somehow associated with Matan Torah and Chag HaShavuot, and even the events on the mountain were somehow related to that. So there's much, much more to say. Unfortunately, there's not any time to say it. But, you know, perhaps in the future we'll take a look at some other avenues of it. But what I hopefully we accomplished over the course of this hour plus was was to see how Shavuot went from Chag HaKatzir to Zman Matan Torah Teinu.